There's never been a faster or easier way to start your weight loss journey than with PlushCare. PlushCare accepts most insurance plans and gives you online access to board-certified physicians who can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Take charge of your health and speak with a board-certified physician about a weight loss plan that's right for you. Get started today at PlushCare.com/weightloss. That's PlushCare.com/weightloss. PlushCare.com/weightloss.
Hello, I'm Sophie Ellis-Bextor, and welcome to Spinning Plates, the podcast where I speak to busy working women who also happen to be mothers about how they make it work. I'm a singer, and I've released 7 albums in between having my 5 sons, aged 16 months to 16 years, so I spin a few plates myself. Being a mother can be the most amazing thing, but can also be hard to find time for yourself and your own ambitions. I want to be a bit nosy and see how other people balance everything. Welcome to Spinning Plates. Hello, you. Am I in a very echoey room? Yes, very echoey. I'm on my way to get the kids from school, and I've run out of time to record this in more leisurely fashion. So basically, I'm now at the tube station near my house, and I've gone into... Sometimes at the tube stations, they have those funny little waiting rooms that no one ever uses unless it's freezing. So I'm in here on my own. I'm a bit out of breath because I just ran up the stairs to get to the platform. But enough about me. How are you? How's your week been? Everything all right? What have I been doing? I went to Dublin. I went to Dublin to do something with a department store called Brown Thomas, which is somewhere I always loved visiting when I was little. I say little, like teenager, when I used to go and visit my friend who was at college, uni, in Dublin. I'd go and visit. So I've done something for them for their Christmas campaign, which was pretty fun. And it was nice to go and see Dublin. And it was a beautiful day when I got there. And then, what else I've been doing? I did some filming yesterday, actually, because I've done a track with a German guy called Alex Christensen. He does a lot of things with orchestras where he does reworkings of old songs. I've done a cover of a 80s song by Laura Branigan called Self Control, and we filmed a little video for that yesterday. My friend Lisa did my hair and makeup, and I slept in the eyelashes because they looked good, and I'm happy to report they're still on today. So I look a little bit crazy for school run, but not much more crazy than normal. And this week's guest is someone I only spoke to last week, and actually, what date is it? I think it was her birthday yesterday, so happy 50th birthday, Dani Minogue. Dani Minogue is my guest this week. Completely, completely lovely. Twinkly, positive, upbeat. Must be something in those Minogue genes that they have such a positive outlook on everything, because I know that having done a couple of gigs with Kylie and spoken to her, she's got a very similar outlook. But Kylie's completely lovely. My tube's arrived. I'm going to leave you with the two of us. It's really lovely to talk to her, and I think you'll enjoy it. See you on the other side. I'm 42 now. And when I was approaching my 40s, I remember saying to my mum, I don't really have an idea of what 40s means. I had quite a clear idea of my 30s, and weirdly, I was always really looking forward to it. But for me, 40s seems to have been a bit of sort of finding myself, you know, still raising a young family, still very, very busy with work, and sort of slightly taking stock of how I found myself where I'm at. Yeah. Is that something that resonates with you for what this last decade has been for you as well? Is that normal?
Yeah, I mean, I was just finishing off writing my book when my waters broke, and then
really?
There's a baby there. Yeah,
wow.
And I was like, no, I've just got to finish this. It was like literally the last thing, and I'm such a control freak and like into details and stuff. And I'm like, no, this can't happen now. So it was really funny. And I mean, I've been excited to go into each decade. 30s was my most excitement, and I find that's when women mostly freak out, because it's like at 30 you're meant to somehow have a few things together. So Are you with somebody that you want to be with? Have you had the baby that you want? Are you in the job that you've always dreamed of? And sometimes none of those things have happened yet, and so a lot of people freak out. I was running around doing shows, having a great time, and I just like flew into my 30s. Going into my 40s, I had like a small baby, and it was definitely an adjustment for me. I just got my first birthday card arrive yesterday, and it had this big gold 5-0 on it. And I looked at it and I'm like, oh my God, I'm that person. I'm that 50-year-old person. Like, I've been used to going to other people's houses and it's birthday and you see the cards there with those big numbers on it. That's a big number. And yeah, it wasn't until really I just saw those numbers there. I was like, oh, this is really happening. I think the best bit has been with the age, you know, of a big birthday approaching, is to just look back, just take time and look back over what's happened up until now and enjoy it, and enjoy it with family and friends. And I'm sure you've done so much of that with your book. It's like when you open up to something and then you let other people into that with you, there are really great conversations that start happening.
Definitely.
So, yeah, here we are.
Oh, here's to it, I say. I mean, I think I actually really like getting older. I like it a lot more than I thought I would. I really enjoy it. I think there's lots and lots of benefits to it. Although, actually, funnily enough, whenever I do have a big birthday, I'm never sure if I like the cards that have the big numbers on the front. Not because I don't mind at all what age I am. I suppose I just feel like people doing that in a kind of... deal with it. Like, here's the numbers, deal with it. But I guess your lockdown has given you plenty of opportunity for that birthday reflection. So your birthday, is it the 20th?
20th right? of October. We'll still, so be, still be in lockdown for the next week. You know, my mum is, you know, it's been stressful. We couldn't have my brother's 50th with him. This is my second birthday in lockdown. We're just still here. But I was like, that's fine. We'll just do a family dinner when we come out. You know, it's just delayed.
I had 2 lockdown birthdays. And actually, you just sort of get on with it. And I'm a big believer in saving up the celebrations. I mean, we won't dwell on lockdown too long because I think, you know, we've done so many, there's been so many chats. But I do wonder, what does Australia think of the UK? Do you guys think we're absolutely mad? And how we're carrying on, and just life is kind of, because the pandemic visibility here is pretty minimal, I'd say.
I think we're so in a big fix here at the moment. Checking, you know, what are the numbers here? What are the numbers in Sydney? You know, are the borders still shut? Can you get across the border? I mean, there's been so much stress that I just don't have time in the day to keep checking on other countries and stuff. I'm vaguely across it. Like, obviously, my work with QVC, I am having, you know, Zoom meetings all the time, and, you know, we check in on each other, and you know, we're still seeing each other with our bedroom backgrounds. And some people are just traveling back into the office, but it's like, on a rotation kind of thing, not like everybody at once. So from what I'm seeing through them, that's all I'm seeing. And it feels like they're doing it like really slowly and calmly and really keeping everything to a minimum, regardless of what's happening outside. So I don't know. That's...
I just sometimes wonder what other countries think. But in sort of happier things, you mentioned QVC. So that's something that's happening at the moment. You're a new range of your petite range. And I was watching a video of you talking about actually a really valid point that petite doesn't mean tiny all over. It's people, is it 5'2" and under that qualifies for the petite?
Yeah, sort of it's basically range. A fashion word that means short. And they kind of, most labels will say from 5'4" and under is petite, and 5' and above is regular size. And then you'll have, I don't know what size it goes for tall, tall people, but there's sort of those three categories with the height. And it's been really hard to find clothes my whole life, and it really gave me a complex where I thought something's wrong with me, because everyone else I know goes out shopping and they buy something, they put it on and looks great. I never could buy anything and it would fit me. Every single piece in my wardrobe was altered to fit. Mm. And my grandma taught me how to sew. I know about patterns. I work with couture designers. So I could go into, you know, a seamstress and say, I need you to do this, this and this. But you can never still get it perfect, because when you can't adjust the armhole, if it's a knit, you can't cut it. If there's a zip detail, you can't cut through that. There's all of these things. And it actually, when all the proportions aren't right, it makes you look shorter and wider. But, you know, like you go to a couture fitting and you get something that fits you and you're like, oh, my God, I never look so good. Of course, it's like made to absolutely fit every millimetre of your body. But it was just so depressing because there was never anything out there that I could buy. So I kept thinking every time I took something off the rack, there's something wrong with me. There's something wrong with me. It's that internal dialogue, because why doesn't this work?
Yeah.
It doesn't work.
And actually, I think, so many people, that's so many women. That's, you know, my sister actually, she's 5 foot, and I'm sure that would resonate with her hugely. Just that feeling of going into a shop and thinking, oh, there's another place where I don't see myself reflected in these clothes at all. And I put them on and they just, the arms are too long, the shoulders are too wide, the hem's the wrong length, the waist is in the wrong place.
Yeah, you're constantly made to feel like you're not going to fit in, or you've got to shop in the kids' department. For women who are bigger than that, you know, size zero, which people think is petite, if you're a larger size, there's nothing there for you. So QVC have invested in this and they're listening to all of my concerns. There's at least one petite person in every department that I'm working with, and at the meetings you just see the petite person go, I know, I feel your pain, I know exactly what you're talking about, and you have that zing, that connection. And so they've allowed me to do from size 6, which I am, up to a size 22. And I don't know anywhere in the world that there is a petite designer designing petite clothes that are that diverse in a range of sizes. So every day I get up, I'm like, I just can't believe how great this is, that they are backing it all the way. And then the messages that you get on the website from different women, you know, like, it's heartbreaking to me. I didn't realise I was petite until my early 20s. There's not a lot of stuff out there. If it is out there, it's not inclusive in sizes, and a lot of it is a very young skew.
Yes,
and I like that, actually. Funky fashion stuff, but, you know, I've had a baby, so I have to wear a bra with everything. You know, once you've breastfed, those guys aren't the same again. So it's like, you know, I'm not wearing these skimpy da-da-da-da-da outfits. Mm. And, you know, to get messages from women 50 and above, up until I remember one just stopped me in my track, a woman who's 70 who ordered one of my jackets and said, it's the first time in my life I've ever had anything that I ordered that fits me. Because it's a true petite. Wow. A lot of petite ranges just chop off 2 inches off the bottom, and your sister at 5 foot would still be hemming them. So I go 3 inches up, and everything, the armholes, the necklines, the pattern, everything is graded down to fit on the body. So it's like, it's an emotional experience when people try it on and they, okay, there's nothing wrong with me, you know, and they can get excited about shopping and excited about fashion. I mean, I see what you wear and like outfits and costumes and stuff, and when you're petite, you want to be able to enjoy all of that stuff as well.
Absolutely. And how you feel about the clothes that you wear say so much about your identity a lot of the time. And actually, you know, you mentioned there about when you have a baby, and sometimes it takes you a little minute after you've become a mum to sort of find yourself again as well. And I was thinking, you and I have both gone through it where we've had a baby when we have a day job that is very closely associated to our aesthetic. And I know when I had my first baby, maternity clothes and getting dressed for anything sort of in the public eye again afterwards, it took me quite a long time to sort of find my way back to myself. Can you remember if that was something that you felt like as well?
I remember driving past like schools, and I'd see all the parents huddled around. I go, I'd just be thinking, why do they all dress the same? It's like, what? Do you have to dress like that when you have kids? Now I'm one of those parents at the school gate, and I'm like, before I had Ethan, the only pair of flat shoes I had were for going to the gym, the one pair. And now I need flat shoes, like, for running around, running after him. He's an 11-year-old boy, and, you know, you... Like, the waistlines have come up on everything, because every time you're bending over to pick up that dummy and now pick up toys and do stuff, like, you can't wear low-rise jeans. That's not a parent-approved, you know, outfit. You don't want to be...
They don't call them mum jeans for nothing.
Right. So, yeah, it was a whole transformation, and it's just like there's the you that's working and you know, got this amazing wardrobe of all these heels, and then there's the mum, this is what I need to wear to get through the day. And then it's trying to close the gap on those things, and I feel like the older Ethan's getting, the more I can close that gap again, and I'm finding myself where it's like, okay, if he runs off, you know, he knows he's got to come back. It's fine. It's not like having a little toddler.
Yeah, no, definitely. But it's interesting that you feel like still closing the gap, because I think it does take, I think it's actually quite an ongoing process, and probably as well as, you know, you're sort of readjusting to priorities and how you feel about yourself. I mean, quite alarmingly for my kids, I feel like I'm more uninhibited now with what I put on than I've ever been, which I think they'd probably prefer if I was a little bit more inhibited, really. But I've just sort of really been enjoying not caring as much. And I don't know, I mean, it's funny, when I put on my stuff for work, if I put on something sparkly, they kind of are looking at me like, I don't know, it makes me feel like a superhero in a way. It's like having a secret life. I quite like it. And I like going to work and having that space for myself and getting dressed up, and the juxtaposition of how I might have started my day, you know, by the school gates, and then finishing up wearing something really twinkly. Did you enjoy being pregnant? Was that a nice
loved
you,
it.
Do you think?
I loved, like, at around 5-6 months when belly's big and you're like rubbing the sides of it. I loved it. I hear a lot of friends say, if I could go back to any age, I'd be 20 with my washboard stomach and, you know, in a bikini. Honestly, if I could choose anything, I'd just be 5 months pregnant. It's just loved it. I didn't have to suck anything in. It's just like, it's out there. Like, I guess there were just so many hormones going on in my body that I was just like, oh, I'm just loving myself, loving all the changes. And, yeah, I was really lucky, had an easy pregnancy and, you know, no sickness or anything. So it was enjoyable.
Yeah, that's so lovely as well. I know exactly that feeling. I liked it. The more pregnant I got, the more sort of, I really embraced this. It's almost quite an absurd shape you get to by the end, I think, but it feels sort of wonderful, like really like ripe. And I really enjoyed that as well, actually. It's like, and it's so temporary, you know, but it's like just, and also, you know, the fact that your body can do all that, it's quite a marvel, isn't it?
Yeah.
I was thinking, so now Ethan is 11, is that right?
Yeah.
Yeah, so he's pretty much same age as my second one down, Kit. But am I right in thinking that's the age you actually started being on TV when you were 11?
No, I started at 7, and I was working full-time from the age of 10, and, you know...
You're working full-time?
Banking payroll, weekly paychecks into my bank account from 10, yeah.
So how does it feel now having a child that's that age that you were working full-time? You like, Ethan, what's going on, mate? where's my percentage?
It's really weird because he has a few, like, passions, like little hobbies, but nothing that he's just that focused on. Like, I see other little kids, and there's some kids that do Auskick footy, and they are there. And you know they're going to end up doing that somewhere because they're obsessed. Every second of the day they're playing footy or whatever it is. I just felt like when I was doing it professionally, I just got to do the thing that I loved. I wasn't really aware it was a job because it was just joyful and fun, so it didn't feel like a job, although I had, you know, a schedule to keep to. And he's just not that guy. He's not someone that is driven yet for anything in particular. So I just love seeing him float about and enjoy the things that, that he likes doing. He loves reading. He loves rap music. So I guess they're two of the biggest things.
Yeah, and it's actually quite a marvel, isn't it, when you have a small person and they're kind of so separate to you. And I think, you know, you, before you have a baby, sometimes you picture that you're going to have someone that's almost, you know, something familiar, so maybe like a sort of smaller version of you. But when they actually have their own hopes and desires and passions that are so different,
yeah,
it's kind of constantly pretty fascinating, isn't it? And,
yeah.
And it sort of impresses you, like, wow, you're really your own person.
Yeah.
Yeah. But it's hard to imagine being seven and actually having that goal. And I mean, I was, you know, I knew already, but I was looking, you know, this morning at all the things you've done, and there's so much in there. It's an incredible career that you've had. And it's almost sort of slightly, I mean, I know you do get on with all of the acting and presenting and music and lots of different crossover sections, but it does feel a little bit like there's sort of almost like chapter headings to each bit. So TV was really dominant, and then music more dominant, and now sort of presenting and hosting and your designing is more prominent. Is that the way that it feels from where you're standing as well?
Yeah, there are things that have really jumped up front for me, but I really feel like I've done all of them since I started working at 10. So we were singing and dancing in the TV show that I was on. They would give us little hosting links to do, and I asked if I could design my own costumes for some of the numbers. So I was in the wardrobe department with the wardrobe girls, like creating my costumes and then going on and singing my songs. But I'd get like into the production meetings and say, I want to do this song and I want to do it this way and I've got these thoughts. So that whole kind of all of those skills that I end up using as an adult are what I was just naturally doing back then. And I had all these different departments of people that were willing to spend time and teach me about stuff. So it was just expanding on those or just at times focusing on one of them. But it's really hard when you get that kind of slasher thing where people are like, oh, she does this, 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 this. For me, it's all one thing. How you present yourself, music's in me. I love communicating with people, so TV is a natural for me. The acting has been incredible, all of the learning the lines and that teamwork. I was in the young talent team, you know, as a kid. It was all teamwork and here's your bit, then you've got to let the other person come forward. And for me, I'm just doing what I've always done, but now those things have labels to them, and
yeah,
so I normally get that whole slasher intro whenever I'm on any kind of show. It's like the this, the that, you know, but I don't see it that way from me.
No, I guess, and I suppose as well, what it is when you're, it's about what's visible to people. You know, most people are quite simple creatures, aren't they? Because they'll see one thing and be like, okay, that's what's happening now. And they wouldn't have any idea when you're doing that talent show that you're also in the wardrobe department saying, actually, I want to get involved with making my fashion, and which obviously now tallies completely with all the threads of what you do now. And I suppose it's a matter of, I mean, I'm so amazed at how self-motivated you were from such a young age.
If you're struggling to lose weight, you've probably heard about weight loss medications like Wegovy or Zepbound, and you might be wondering if they're right for you. Meet PlushCare, a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. If you qualify, they can safely prescribe you medication from the comfort of your own home. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss. plushcare.com/weightloss.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, how to get 30, how to get 20, 20, 20, how to get 20, 20, how to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Ready to pop the question? The jewelers at BlueNile.com have got sparkle down to a science with beautiful lab-grown diamonds worthy of your most brilliant moments. Their lab-grown diamonds are independently graded and guaranteed identical to natural diamonds, and they're ready to ship to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
When you make decisions for your company, you look for the no-brainers. If you have a lot of mailing to do, Stamps.com is the ultimate no-brainer. Use the Stamps.com mobile app to mail everything you need to keep your business running with up to 89% off USPS and UPS. Make the same no-brainer decision as over 1 million other businesses with Stamps.com. Use code PROGRAM for a special offer. That's Stamps.com, code PROGRAM.
Age. You know, listening to how you speak about how you're a mother to Ethan and letting him just flourish and see where his passions take him, it actually sounds like maybe your mum was doing the same thing and reacting to, she wasn't there kind of going, why didn't you go over there and ask if you can do presenting? You sounded like you were kind of going, right, now I want to do this and now I want to do that. And was she quite a reactive mother to what you wanted to do?
I think it was a combination. So my mum had three kids under the age of three. I don't know how you do that.
Wow.
There weren't even disposable nappies back then. We had like the cloth nappies with the big pins in the side. I'm like, oh, Mum, yeah.
So how did
you do it? So when we were old enough to have like some activity to do after school, it was easier for Mum to take us all to the same place. And my sister really loved to be musical, so she learnt the flute, the piano, and a whole bunch of things. So Mum said, oh, do you want to come and learn something too? I tried learning it and I was just like, this is just not my passion. And It's kind of just a waste of money and, like, I just didn't get it. So I asked her, please, 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 can I go to a school to learn how to sing and dance? That's all I want to do. And they looked up a place in the Yellow Pages for me, you know, and kids listening to this, the Yellow Pages was Google back then. That's where how you found phone numbers for places.
Yeah.
And found this place to learn how to sing and dance, and that was actually connected to the TV show Young Talent Time. So I had no idea. I had no ambitions to go audition for anything. I just wanted to learn how to do it because it was a hobby that I loved. And the teachers saw me there and said to the producers, you've got to bring her in for an audition because, like, she's just standing out in the class and you should see her. And when they asked me for the audition, I just thought, you've got the wrong person, because there were all these girls there that would also do Estedfords, and they'd come dressed up, fully made up, fully costumes, and their mums were out the back sewing sequins, you know, furiously on all of these Lycra leotards. And I just rocked up, like, in my school uniform, and I was just, like, low-key, not involved. And so I really thought that they'd messed up and, like, put the wrong student name on the audition. But I was like, hey, I'll go. It'll be a great experience. And I went, and the rest is history. But the thing that got me into it was I saw Olivia Newton-John in Greece, and I was like,
yeah,
that's what I want to do. I did not know it was a job. Just that, singing, dancing. And when she has that clothing transformation in it, was everything to me. And I had that, just a feeling of being drawn to that. And then when I had my first moment on stage in the TV show Young Talent Time, I stood on the stage and there's a full live audience and then bright lights coming towards me. So, you know, when you're looking at the audience and they're sort of in the dark, you can sort of see people, but it's kind of dark, but you see that light coming towards you.
Yeah.
And so young, I just had this feeling that went all through my body to my toes, like, this is joy. This is where I want to be. So whatever I have to do to be up here on stage under the lights, that's what I want to do. But not knowing, do I have the talents for that? You know, could it be good enough to do it? What does that entail? I had no idea.
But I think maybe you have to have that feeling of, like, it's sort of this or nothing, I think. Because I think you have to have that relationship with it. You have to sort of thrive on it. Otherwise, you just won't probably go the distance.
No.
I think it was Ed Sheeran that was saying that if you want to make it as a musician, you've sort of got to have no plan B. And I, nothing. And I actually think I don't actually have any other qualifications. It's the things I ended up doing are like literally the only things I can do, I feel like.
Yeah, so. Me too. I left school at 16. I don't have any qualifications, none.
Yeah.
It was a real joy for me quite a few years ago to get an honorary doctorate in the arts at Southampton Solent University in the UK and to be recognised for this whole lifetime of working and doing what I'm doing. And it's
that's amazing. I love that.
Yeah, when something like that happens, you're like, yeah, I guess I do have accumulated a lot of skills, but yeah, no qualifications as such.
Well, I guess as well it reinforces the validity of the arts actually, because what both of us are talking about is obviously something that does take a lot of hard graft, and you've worked really hard and earned your stripes and proved your talent over and over. But I think we actually, in terms of, you know, the path we set for kids and education, puts actually the value on that quite low. So that's why you're sort of encouraged to think that that's actually, you know, if you'd been doing the same thing and it led up to you being a doctor, you wouldn't be sat there going, oh, I actually haven't got any other I can only be a doctor, guys. You know, it has to be enough, actually, you know. Yeah. It's sort of the perspective that we skew onto what is actually a lot of talent and a lot of diversity and resourcefulness and resilience. So it's quite that's probably a whole other thing, really. But
on so that, it was very interesting during the pandemic and our country being, you know, thrown into the spin of COVID, my father saying to me, oh, you know, the government are putting money into this field and that field and making sure we've got people trained for this and that. And of course it's like, you know, building and science and stuff like that. But they're just stripping everything away from the arts. And I nearly lost my breath. And I said to him, right, imagine the entire world going through this pandemic with no music, no art, no Netflix, no TV, no fashion. Like I see on Instagram how much people embrace, went into their wardrobe, grab things. This makes me feel good of actually finding what, you know, sparks joy. And and you're right, it's not highly regarded, and there's so little respect for it. But if you just ask people to stop and imagine their lives without any of that, it'd be real bleak.
Yeah, absolutely. And also coming out the other side of everything, it's going to be what helps articulate what we've been through and make sense of some of the emotions. You do that through the arts, you know. There'll be some really clever stuff that comes out of all the things we've been experiencing that reflects back at us, you know, gives us a way to, a language to speak about it. It's going to be really, that'll be beneficial. It'll be like a little bit of art therapy that comes out of it as well.
Yeah.
So I'm thinking about the ambition that you had and that feeling in the spotlight, and I was doing lots of nodding to you with that, because I also completely relate to the love of Olivia Newton-John and Grease. That's definitely up there as one of my inspirations as well. But so when you're getting on with everything, did you always think you'd be a mum? Was it always something in your peripheral vision, or not really?
I never did. Like, I had friends that were like, right, by this age I'm having one kid or I'm having three kids and I'm going to live there and I'm going to do that. And I had no plan, like complete, you know, just in the music industry. I'm like, I don't know, like next week I've got a gig in Russia. I don't, you know, and then I'm going to Greece and then there's another one in
so
Turkey.
No baby that
week. And I'm off to Ibiza and no plan. But I had no maternal feelings at all until I started doing X Factor in the UK. And so mentoring there, working with the artists and trying to give them any experience that I had to try and help them, and then seeing them evolve was like, wow, I feel so like I'm doing something. And I loved that experience of the mentoring. And I think people could see watching the show, it was a whole different experience for me on the judging panel than for other people who weren't performers. And when I joined the panel, none of the other panel were performers. And then Cheryl Cole came, so she knew that feeling. But it was just great to work with, you know, all of the people that came on the show. But I was real tough love, like real, really firm. And I wouldn't take any nonsense from anyone. And, you know, it was all of that that you use in parenting. And that just, I don't know, it just opened my eyes to something like, maybe I could do this. So I don't know if it was a confidence thing before that I was just like, oh, no, that's not for me. And I guess...
So you mean like it was almost like a maternal dynamic you felt with getting people, like mentoring?
Yeah, yeah. It was just the first time I'd felt that. It's different from working in a team and working in a group. It's like imparting your knowledge and then seeing that help that person was really cool.
Oh, that's really lovely. And I suppose that makes complete sense because it's, yeah, you're sort of nurturing and reacting and imparting what wisdom you have and seeing if you can help someone on their own way and their own journey through it all.
Yeah.
But I was thinking as well that, you know, you mentioned about when women are in their 30s and they're thinking about, you know, oh, am I with the right person? Have I had the right baby? Is this all going on? Or people have got plans. But I think as well in the public eye, I think there's a real lack of tact when it comes to the questions we ask women about their fertility, about their baby plans, about all of that stuff. I mean, was that something that used to bother you, or are you kind of, I suppose if you're not feeling particularly like you've got a baby in the plans, maybe you were just thinking, I can answer that. I don't know. How did you feel?
I guess because I wasn't trying and I didn't have any difficulty. It didn't register with me. I didn't really bother. But now reading so much after being able to have a child and then knowing people who can't and the hurt that, you know, brings with it when people just constantly asking and then other women saying once they've had one child, it's always, when are you going to have another? When are you going to have another? When are you going to have it? And it's like,
yeah.
Do you really want me to turn around and say, well, maybe I can't? You know, like it is difficult. There's a magazine here that I don't know how long ago it was. They just said, we don't ask women that. We do not, like, if you come here and you do an interview with us, that will never be on the list of questions, which I think is really
brilliant.
Cool.
Mm. That is really cool.
And then if people want to bring it up, they bring it up in the interview, but they're not asked about it.
Yeah, because I think there's a big difference between someone saying it to you conversationally, because, look, you know, family stuff is a really natural icebreaker. And I don't, you know, sometimes people are really well-meaning and they'll say something that might be, you know, touching on a really sensitive subject and they don't know. But I do think in the public eye, there's a sort of slightly different emphasis, and it's not coming from a friendship thing. It's more in a kind of sort of gathering information. And I've always thought, I just find it very peculiar, really, that it's such a front and center part of conversations, you know, to say about if you're having kids and then once, as you say, if you've had one, if you're having more or when you're planning that and all that. I just think it's really, really personal.
Yeah.
I think, you know, you have to, you get this sort of layer of answering it in a way that, well, for me anyway, I've always answered anything like that in a way that doesn't ever betray that I think it's personal, if that makes sense, to kind of just make it move on. Mm. But really, I think what that magazine has done is brilliant. I think that's more of that, please.
Yeah.
It's not really very, very fair at all. And I was thinking as well that, so if you're one of three under three, that is a big crowd to be in from the get-go. And do you think there might have been a part of you that might have quite enjoyed a little bit more space, like Ethan's experiencing? I think because I grew up as an only child for quite a long time, and I didn't know any different, and I quite liked a lot of it, I think.
I was pretty close with my brother growing up, just because we were closer in age, and my sister was like, I don't want to hang out with those two young ones. And I shared a bedroom with my sister, and we had a big line that we taped down the middle of the room, like, you don't come on my side and I'm not coming on your side. And it was just, it's kind of like a difficult age gap at that age.
What was the age gap, sorry?
So 3 years. 3 years. And but with my brother, he was looking for someone to hang out with. So he would rope me into stuff, put me on a bike on the top of a hill and go, it's okay, you don't need brakes, and push me down. I'm like, you're one! And we would, you know, I was a real tomboy. We would, our favourite thing was going and catching lizards and frogs, and I would always come home covered in mud, and Mum just let us go and play and be kids, and it was really great. It wasn't till I got older that I got really into much more girly stuff, but I guess it was when, you know, I was seeing movies like Grease with Olivia and that whole clothing thing, and I was like, whoa, what? This is insane.
And how long were you sharing a room then? Was that throughout your whole sort of childhood?
No, it was, we moved houses a lot when we were younger. So it was in a particular house that we lived in probably till I was about 10. So we were over it, so we moved to a house where we had our own room, and that was just unreal.
Yeah, and then are you the sort of mother that you thought you would be? I mean, I was thinking about when you were saying about the mentoring sort of sparking something in you. Does it actually seem quite similar to what your mothering is like, or is it very different?
Yeah, like tough love. Really, so I'm very firm, and there are rules, but then it's just, as you say, like wanting to see that person blossom and find themselves. Like, here's what I know, but they've got to put that together in their own way to use it and find out what works for them.
So when you say about rules and tough love, I mean, I think that's brilliant, and I hope I've got enough boundaries in place. I think I'm probably a bit of more of a pushover than I would have liked. But what kind of thing do you mean? Do you mean in terms of like behaviour, or in terms of how the day is structured?
Like, not structuring of the day, but just like manners, and that's outside the house and inside the house. So some kids are like, when they're in front of other adults, it's like, okay, I've been told, you know, to put on my best behavior. And it's like, with Ethan, I expect him to respect the fact that there are other people living in this house too. So he can do his thing, I can do my thing. But, you know, dude, we've all got to like live together, and you've got responsibilities and things that you've got to live up to. And I think that, you know, I never spoke to him like a little baby or a little boy. I spoke to him like an adult, and I, you know, at one, he would sit in his high chair and say, delicious, rather than yum, yum. Like, it just, you know, it was just because he was hearing what I was saying. And so, yeah, he's pretty switched on, but he's a kid. So
yes, and actually you're possibly approaching the bit where he gets taller than you, and then the telling off changes dynamic as well, because it's different when you're telling off someone where you have to look up to them instead of look down.
I think that may have been also wrapped up in me being strict, because I knew that it was going to be, he'd be very young age where he would be taller than me. So his dad's over 6 foot, and yeah, he's turned 11 in July, and he's almost my height now. So, you know, that's
a funny thing, isn't it, when you're looking him in the eye? And was there ever a part of you that thought you might not go back to the same day job? Was there ever a question mark with that?
After having Ethan?
I was
itching to work. I love being a mum, but I don't want to be a mum 100% at the time. I love it when he goes to school, he does his thing. Obviously, this is really hard now because with so much homeschooling, we're getting on top of each other. But I really like going off and doing my thing and getting that fulfillment. And like you said before, getting dressed up in fabulous costumes. And he sees me now, like he knows when I'm getting ready for work as opposed to just getting ready to do something else. And he's cool with it. You know, he doesn't, when he was very, very small, he didn't want to leave me, but he's cool. He lets me go and do my thing and come back.
Yeah, did you? Well, it's fun. That's actually really impressive, because sometimes I find it the other way, that it gets a bit harder when they get older. But I guess if you've always managed to place a lot of respect associated with what you do for a living, then I think that rubs off on them. And I actually realised in lockdown that I hadn't done enough of that. So I'd sort of downplayed my work a lot. So now that I'm back to full pelt, I've had quite a lot of conversations with them recently where they're saying, oh, I wish you could just do something else, because you're always out now and you're always going off to work. And I think one of them's like, can't you just be an author and then you can just write at home while I'm at school and be there when I get in? So I think that's really smart of you to have sort of build that in, that give it that space, that significance, that actually this is part of who I am and what I need for me. Mm. But can you remember when he was little? Was there a weird feeling when you first went back? Because I found it quite a big adjustment trying to sort of find myself again, I think, when I had Sonny, he's 17 now, but I felt like some of the edges had been knocked off me a little bit, I think, in terms of how it was a bit like, how do I normally do this? How do I normally perform? How do I normally look? Did you have any of that, or was it quite smooth?
The thing that I had and I still have now is that internal clock that's got their schedule running as well. Mm. Like, I cannot be if I don't see a clock and I don't have my phone on me, I know when it's pickup time. It's like, oh my God, it's school pickup time. Like, it's just, you have that internal body clock. Or I'll be at work and when it's bedtime and stuff, I'll be working, but I'll be kind of thinking, oh, when I get a break, I just want to make a call and see, did he get off to sleep? Like, how is he? So it's just that you're running another person's schedule as well, constantly in the back of your mind.
Yeah, no, I completely agree with that. It's like you have all these like threads in your head of what else is happening, and okay, they'll be doing this now. I mean, it sounds like throughout your life you've picked up so many life skills. What do you think you hope that you can pass on to Ethan out of what you've learned through your life?
Well, like you were saying before, he's just so different to me. I like him to be really open of other people who are different to him and accepting of other people that are different to him. That's huge for me. And so, you know, he's getting that now at this age. And I think kids this age are so different than, like, my generation when we were at school. Like, anything different stood out, but we didn't see stuff in media with people that were different. Like, now I see from commercials there's, you know, someone with prosthetic legs in a commercial, but it's not for prosthetic legs. They're in a commercial for an ice cream or something like it. There's, like, just you, people are visible now across media, and it's so much more accepted. Like, I don't hear the stuff coming out of his mouth or the kids at school that's the kind of teasing and stuff that used to go on when I was school, because they're just more open to,
yeah,
to people being different from them, and that's okay.
Yeah. No, I think that's a really brilliant thing, actually, because I remember I did this conversation. I was chatting to a guest called Sylvia Mack, and she really sadly, when she was only really little, when she was two, she'd been scolded very badly, burnt very badly on her back, left her with terrible scars, and it really affected her confidence and lots of things. But I remember saying to her, always, did you see anyone out there that sort of, you know, you felt like reflected? Was there any sort of body out there that you thought, oh yeah, that they're like me? And she said, yeah, the Elephant Man. And I thought, wow, we're much better now, aren't we, at being inclusive and appreciating that, you know, so many people, in fact, probably everybody in some way falls outside of the typical. We've all got things that are more conventional side of us and the things that fall outside of it. And actually, you know, when you started talking about the petite range and, you know, how going into shops and not seeing yourself there, to some people that's, you know, I say, well, that's just fashion. But actually, how you choose to present yourself, how you want to dress, feeling that that is accessible for you, that you're allowed to celebrate your form and go out in confidence, that's actually a really big deal. So those things of, yeah, being more inclusive and for kids to grow up thinking that, you know, they're not going to be, it's okay to be curious about things that are different to you, but you're definitely going to be supportive and appreciate not everybody's leading the same life as you.
Yeah.
Empathy is a good life skill for sure.
Yeah, I think with, I try to think about the different aspects of what I'm doing with my design. And one thing that always sticks out to me is that we've all heard growing up, like, dress for the job you want and, like, make it sharp. And if you're going after that job, you dress the best that you can. Well, when there aren't clothes there that fit you to dress for that job, you're going to miss out on that job. So if I was in a job that required suiting, that doesn't exist. So it's all going to look so big on me. They visually see when I walk in the room, it looks like she's a kid wearing adult's clothes. So we're not going to listen to her ideas like she's another adult on the same wavelength as us. You get treated like a kid if you look like things don't fit you. So if you have sort of three people come in for the job and you're the person that's just wearing the clothes that don't fit you and you're doing your best, they're like, let's go with the sharp one that was like, you know. But you could be saying exactly the same, but people don't hear you. They're not listening to you because they're visually taken in. It's that classic thing when you walk through the door. It's the first 10 seconds people look you top to toe and then back up to your face and that information's gone in. So I'm like, I want people to have that opportunity who don't have the budget for, you know, getting something made specifically to fit them, to be able to walk in and buy something that gives them, you know, that confidence. And with my petite clothing in Australia, I made them, you know, invest money into having mannequins made because I'd never walked into a store and seen myself. It's like, I'm not the maternity mannequin. I'm not the regular size because even with the regular ones, they make them sort of over 6 foot tall. And I'm not the kids mannequin, but the one I relate most to is the kids mannequin. But that's how people tend to see you and treat you as well. So it's like really cool. The confidence that it gives you inside is hard to describe, but when I speak to other petite people, we just click.
Yeah, yeah. No, that's, I think it's brilliant. I think it's really brilliant. I was thinking sort of back to the motherhood. When you've been talking about, you know, all the things you've got going on and clearly still working incredibly hard and in very diverse fields, it sounds like Ethan and, you know, motherhood sort of tessellated really quite surprisingly sort of smoothly into everything. Did that surprise you? I mean, I think that's really wonderful. I don't think it always has to be, you know, this has been really tough, but I just, especially if you spent a lot of your 30s thinking, I'm not that sure. I mean, does it surprise you how, you know, Ethan's just come along for the ride now?
It's really been quite effortless. The only thing that was difficult was when I got sick after having him. And I didn't know for ages what was wrong with me. So I just got to the point where I was getting weaker and weaker and losing more and more and more weight. And I remember looking into his cot and he's ready to get up. And I remember just looking down at him thinking, I don't know if I can physically lift you out of there. Obviously, when you have a newborn, you're so, everyone's sleep deprived. So you're like, I'm not feeling great, but that's understandable because, like, I haven't slept through the night. So it kind of crept up on me, and it was that one moment where I'm like, I don't even know how I'm going to pick up my child, and I have to pick him up to look after him. So I find out that my thyroid had gone, which happens to a lot of women.
It happened to me.
The, you know, what happens with childbirth, like putting your body through a lot. So my thyroid had gone, so I found that. And I was thinking, okay, well, that makes sense. That's it. And started to regulate my body weight and you know, feel pretty good again, but something was still not right. And then I got appendicitis and I had to be rushed to the hospital, had my appendix out. After that, I was like, oh, now I feel like myself again. But having to go through health problems with a small child and working and trying to look after him, that was extremely difficult. So I always just think now, like, as long as I've got my health, like, that's all I want, is just have my health, then it's fine.
Definitely. Yeah, big time. No, that's and actually I think that, well, I don't know. I think that thyroid thing is quite a common thing. I know that happened to me. I didn't have the appendicitis as well, though. That must have been awful. That's like a real emergency situation as well, isn't it?
Yeah.
Yeah, that's a big one.
I was in London and I remember really clearly it was Friday night going into Saturday of Easter weekend, and I'm on the floor. I've been vomiting for hours. I'm now bringing up bile and I'm like, I have to get myself to a hospital. And I call my GP and I'm like, as if he's going to pick up. After one ring, he just picked up the phone, and my doctor answers straight away and, like, gets me to a hospital. But it's like, yeah, you just, I was thinking, I don't know. Like, because they all, like, split and go on holidays, like, at times. Yeah, yeah. Like that. Mm.
I know, and you're thinking, you're not supposed to be taking time off. I need you now. Well, I'm actually really happy to hear it. I think effortless is a lovely word to be able to use about becoming a mother, particularly when, you know, your work is so much part of who you are. I mean, every mother has a different relationship with their work. And for some people, particularly, you know, if you're a creative person, then the seam between what you do for a living and who you are, there's not really one there. It's just about, you know, where, how the balance is in terms of your life, but you need it to feel like you, I think.
Yeah.
So I think it's really lovely to hear that it's effortless, because I think sometimes you can worry that that's not going to be the case, but actually you kind of always come back to yourself in the end somewhere along the line. Definitely.
Yeah.
So before I let you go, I want to say, firstly, it's been such a joy to talk to you properly. I know we've met a couple of times, but I've really, really enjoyed talking to you. I think you're so brilliant. So thank you very much for your time. And secondly, I realised when you were talking about the extent of the lockdown, that there's actually a loophole that you can totally flaunt should you want to be able to fly home, because I know it's the other side of the tracks, but I last week filmed a cameo for Neighbours.
Oh my God, I saw you were working with my best mate. Lee was directing.
Yes, yes.
He's my best friend. Oh my God, I saw the pictures.
So basically what the girl, so I did a scene with Gemma Donovan.
Yeah.
And so she lives half in Melbourne and half in the UK, half in London.
Yeah.
She'd been in lockdown in Melbourne and couldn't leave. So got Neighbours to film an episode in London just so that she could leave. So I thought, you can exploit some of your contacts there. Maybe do a sort of guest appearance in Home and Away, like a revisit, and then get them to film it in wherever you want to go, actually.
Yeah.
You could probably do it in time for a really, you know, they could do like a thing in maybe the Caribbean when it's your 50th or something. I don't know. You could really work this
exactly,
system if you wanted to.
Exactly. Am I allowed to ask what character you played, or you can't say anything about it yet?
I can tell you everything. It's just that it's a bit disappointing in a way, because there's not really a huge amount to say. I'm playing myself. It was one scene. Actually, I said I did it last week. I did it on Monday. So I have one scene with Gemma, and everybody was completely lovely, and I really enjoyed it. And it was really good fun. And I think sort of 10-year-old me is definitely high-fiving me for being in Neighbours, because I used to watch that all the time, and Home and Away, obviously. So yeah, that was so much part. I mean, I didn't realise actually that it's really just big in the UK, Neighbours. In Australia, it's not even really that known, apparently.
No, it's like Home and Away and Neighbours are still really big here. It's just, you know, the population of the UK, that's where their big volume numbers are. But
That's what Gemma told me. She said people in Australia didn't really know it, so I wasn't,
no,
wasn't supposing.
No.
But yes, they do know. Okay, cool.
And whenever my friends come from the UK, because it's in my home city, the first thing they want to do is go on the Neighbours bus tour that goes past Ramsay Street. And the studio that I grew up in doing that show Young Talent Time that I told you about is Studio A in Nunawading at Channel 10 Studios. That is now the Neighbours studio. So I went for a visit. The show that I was on just had their 50th anniversary of their first show, because it ran for 18 years. And I walked in the studio and I was like, this is this is my studio. Why is it, you know, got all of the neighbors set in here? And one of the girls was filming outside and she ran in and she said, I got permission to come on the set and say hi to you. She said, I'm a huge fan. I grew up watching Young Talent Time and I'm working on Neighbours and just wanted to let you know that there's a bunch of crew that work on Neighbours that worked with you on Young Talent Time and they all want to come and say hi, but they're filming scenes. They can't, like, come in. It was surreal. It was just, but, yeah, maybe when we get you back to Australia sometime.
Yes.
You have to film in at the Neighbours studio, do a just a little really another fun cameo. That'd be great.
I would love that. Yes, I'm so yeah, you're right. Maybe I should.
When does your episode go out? Because I know they really closed the gap from like when my sister was doing Neighbours. It was like a year lag before the episode came out. But I don't think it's that long anymore.
I think it is still early next year though. I don't think it's this year. But yeah, okay. I think they said spring. But wow, yeah, I didn't realise there's such a big lag. That really is. Yeah, wow. But I think everything's sped up now, hasn't it? You know, between recording things and putting things out.
Yeah.
You know? The thirst is there. The hunger is there.
So do you has that whet your appetite? Do you have any other, like, things that you want to tick off with TV shows or anything?
I mean, when I was younger, I thought that would be what I'd do. I thought I'd be an actor, and I did, like, acting courses and stuff, but music is my first love. But yeah, I think there's certain things where you think if the right things comes along, I would definitely say yes. And I think, I don't know, maybe like you, I kind of thrive on the fact that any day, like any point, I could get an email or a phone call and it kind of changes the next thing I'm up to. And I've always really liked that feeling.
Yeah. I couldn't do a job where it's like, I know what I'm doing for the next year. Like,
exactly.
I don't really know my whole schedule for tomorrow or next week. But yeah, so great to speak to you. And like your kitchen discos and podcasts have become so important during this time where we are trapped inside. And
I know.
We want to let our minds wander to other places. So it's just been so brilliant that you've done this, and hopefully, you know, keep doing it, because I know some of these things just came to you during lockdown period, but it's just such a great connection with people.
Definitely, I couldn't agree more, and plus it's been the only time I can lock myself in a room and actually finish a sentence when all the homeschooling was happening. So there was a loophole there too.
Yes.
You can't disturb me. I'm recording.
Yeah, exactly. Oh, I mean, I've been doing that here in Australia. Like, the rooms I go into, and I have to say to Ethan, right, for the next hour, unless you're on fire or there's a limb missing, just don't come in.
Yeah, I have those conversations too. Yeah. Perfect. All right, Danny. Well, listen, take care. Have a lovely evening and very happy birthday for next week.
Thank you.
Have a really good one.
Thank you so much.
Until our paths cross again. Take care, Danny. Thank you.
Bye-bye.
So while you were listening to me talking to Danny, I was travelling only two stops in the tube. How is that the time works that way? The weird ways of chronology in podcast land. I'm now... It's actually a really beautiful day. It's really sunny. And I'm walking to get my kids from school. And how nice was Danny? Very positive, upbeat lady. I really enjoyed talking to her. She's very twinkly, pretty perfect pop star, I'd say. But also, I loved how multi-layered her talent is. I loved the idea of Tiny Danny on her talent show, instructing the tailors how to get the fit right on her costumes. And when I spoke to my sister Martha, who is around the 5 foot mark, she was nodding in agreement to everything I said about how Danny spoke about clothes fitting. And so I've put her in the direction of the QVC range, because I think actually there's a lot of stuff I hadn't really thought about. Like, it's not just making the skirts shorter on dresses, is it? There's a lot more to it there about where everything is in proportion. So well done, Danny. Clearly there's a need for that. And Martha, my sister, gives it the thumbs up. And thank you for joining us. Thank you for keeping me company while I was on my tube journey. and I hope the sky is blue wherever you are. I'm really appreciating these days. It's going to be all dark soon. The blooming clock's about to change. I absolutely hate that. I don't agree with it. I hope I haven't offended any listening farmers. As I understand, it's the farming community who benefit. But for the likes of old me, who walk the kids to school every morning, going out in the dark is not that much fun. So, yeah, anyway. So another very middle-aged conversation there about daylight saving time, which I'm sure is not what you came to me for today. So what have I got for you next week? I'm trying to think who I've got recorded. I've got... Is it two I've got more I've got recorded, or three more? Some good ones. Oh, yes. Actually, no, I've got three recorded, and they're all excellent. Wow, you lucky things. What a treat I've laid out for you with this series. Everything from sex coaches to Australian pop strolls and some flipping good chats. Anyway, I'm starting to get nearer the queue of other parents now, and I don't really want them to see me looking like I was talking to myself in my false eyelashes from yesterday. So with that, I will bid you farewell, send you lots of love. Same place, same time next week, yeah? Take care. Have a good half term. Bye-bye. Oh, be Halloween soon. Yay. Be spooky. Bye-bye.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Did you know cats tend to hide symptoms of sickness and pain? I learned this the hard way after losing my cat, Gingy. So I created Pretty Litter, a health monitoring litter that helps detect early signs of illness by changing colors, saving you money and potentially your cat's life. Pretty Litter is veterinarian developed, and it's the easiest way to keep tabs on your fur baby's health right at home.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Okay, I have two new obsessions that I need to share with you. Impress No Glue Press-On Manis and Impress Press-On Falsies Lashes. Trust me, these are getting ready game changers. Both require no glue, so there is no damage to your natural nails and lashes, no mess, and no annoying dry times. Just one step and you're done. Boom. Instant glam. Visit impressbeauty.com/presson and use code PRESSON25 at checkout for 25% off Impress manicure and Press-On falsies.